Well, good morning and welcome to Next Level Church. My name is Bradley Medford. Usually you can find me either hanging in the production booth or behind a computer editing video and making sure that things like this very video make it onto the internet screen that you're probably watching or listening to this on, which is kind of weird if you think about it, but whatever. Today I am thankful for the opportunity to get on stage and to share a message and participate in this series that we've been in. I'm always thankful for that. I've lived a fair amount of time. I'm 39 years old. I've been walking with Jesus for a long time, and I feel like I've had a lot of life experience, and he's taught me some things over the years. Made a lot of mistakes, had a lot of mess ups along the way, but God has been gracious, and he's taught me some things along the way, and I hope that I can share some of those with you. We're going to wrap up a series today. The title of that series is this, Great Expectations. And I want you to notice the tagline that we put on this. It says, embracing your God-given dreams. And that's my hope today as we finish this series. Hopefully you've been working through that, walking through that as we've gotten started the last 3 weeks. And as we finish up today, I hope that you can do that, that you can embrace the dreams that God has placed in you. In this series, we've been looking at the story of Joshua. Joshua, who came after Moses, had some really big shoes to fill, was tasked with leading the Israelites into the promised land. We've been walking through that story. Last week, Pastor Clay continued that series, and he focused on this part of Joshua and Israel's story. The people of Israel, they had gone into the promised land a bit, and as they're moving around, it was a process to take the land, and at one point they faced a river, and he kind of hung out on this story where they come up to a river. It's a lot of people. They've got the Ark of the Covenant, which was not light. I mean, this was a big object to try to carry, and they're facing this river, and it's a similar situation that some of these people had seen or at least heard of when Moses had parted the Red Sea. Now they face a river, and they have to step into the river. They have to get into the water and get wet, and God ceases the flow of the river way upstream, and they have to wait for that victory. There's so much there, and I think Clay did a great job unpacking that. So if you missed that, by all means, go back and catch up on that message. Today, that has happened. And the Israelites are continuing their trek through the promised land, taking cities, taking the land that God has given them. And as we move on in the story, we have one question that I really want us to deal with today. And so here's what we're going to try to answer. How do we get victory? Because we're reading this story about Joshua and the Israelites, and we see all of the victories that God has given them, and we're going to see some more of that today. But it can be easy to read that as just this historical thing and begin to wonder, hey, God, it's nice what you did for the people of Israel. It's cool what you did for Joshua. It's amazing the things that you accomplished there, but what about me today in 2024, in this world, in this day and age, how do I get victory in the places that I need it in life? So that's what we're going to attempt to answer. I want to start with a little bit of a question and an illustration for you. We've got obstacles in our lives, right? We've got difficult things to overcome, and so we've got to figure out how to overcome them. Have you ever worked at something really hard on your own? So by yourself in your own strength, only to figure out that you're missing some knowledge, some assistance, something outside of yourself to begin to make progress. I often think these days it's like the answers are a Google away or a YouTube away, but that hasn't always been the case. I think back to the first time, if you've heard me speak before, you've probably heard me reference running and things of that nature. I like to run. I'm a big guy who likes to run. I get it. Don't laugh. Well, go ahead and laugh. I can't hear you anyway. But the first time I got into running was many years ago. It was back, my daughter is 15 now. At the time, she was about a year and a half old, and I was overweight, still am, whatever. But I was finding myself getting out of breath, trying to chase my toddler around, and I was like, you know what, I should do something about this. I should get myself into some better shape. I'm gonna run. I don't know what possessed me to think that that's the thing I should do, but that was the first thing I thought. And so in order to run, you know, I had to go put some shoes on. And I dug in the closet for the thing that made the most sense. And they looked something like this. They these are a lot cleaner than mine were, but they were just some like beat up old New Balance shoes that I had in the closet. And I put those bad boys on, and I went outside, and I ran until I couldn't run any farther. And it was not a Forrest Gump scene. It was far uglier than that. I made it about to the stop sign at the end of the street, huffing and puffing, and walked back. But that was the start. What I quickly learned in those first few weeks of running was that if I ran in these shoes, man, my knees hurt, and my shins hurt, and muscles that I didn't know I had hurt, and bones hurt, and ankles hurt, and it was just not a pleasant experience. And I shared this with a few people, and I began to hear some advice from some people outside of myself that said, "Hey, you should probably get some running shoes." And I'm like, I have running shoes. I don't know. And they're like, no, like real running shoes. And so I could have been stubborn, and I could have been just like, no, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to do it on my own. I'm just going to keep running, ignore the pain, whatever. But you know what? I went to a store, a running shoe store, and they put me on a treadmill, and they watched the way that I ran, and they gave me some shoe options. I tried on a couple of things. It made an amazing difference. Getting that knowledge outside of myself, getting something that somebody else had, made a big difference. Now, that's a small example that doesn't mean all that much in the grand scheme of life, but it is an example of a principle that I want us to get today, and that principle is this. Maybe. There we go. Victory will come when I get out of the way. If there is ever been a statement that applies more to me in my life, I haven't seen it yet. Victory will come when I get out of the way. In so many parts of my own life and of my own story, there is example after example after example of things that I tried to do on my own, things that I thought I could tackle, things that I thought I could manage, that I could handle, that I would figure out on my own eventually, that I would outsmart, that I would outwork, that I would overcome in some way, that I simply failed at. Where eventually, I had to get out of the way. And that looks like a lot of things in a lot of different situations. We don't have time to walk through all the ways in which I have failed in life simply because I would not get out of the way. I would not ask for help. I would not let God have control. I held tightly to the things that I wanted to do. We see this in the story of Joshua. Joshua had to get out of the way. Joshua couldn't just lead the people of Israel wherever he wanted to go, however he wanted to do it. As he got out of the way and as he listened to God along the way and did what God asked him to do, victory continued to be the outcome. Not because Joshua was this incredible, amazing leader, but because God was working in and through him. In Joshua chapter 10, where we're going to hang out today, I'm going to give you kind of a summary up to the point of where we're going to read. In Joshua 10, the Israelites have crossed the river that we saw last week, and they've seen some amazing things happen. They saw that river. They didn't actually, I would say, they crossed a river bed. That's one of the crazy things that happened. And they're beginning to take the land. Within a couple of chapters, they've gone to the city of Jericho. You've probably heard that story before, how they marched around it, and eventually, after doing so seven times, they blew some trumpets. It was a great marching band concert, and that concert brought down the walls of Jericho, and they took that city. Amazing things are happening. They're taking some cities. They take a city named Ai, which is spelled AI. There's probably a joke in there somewhere, but I'm going to leave it alone. And the people are beginning to notice. As the Israelites have taken a few towns and they're making progress, the people in surrounding cities and lands are beginning to notice this Israelite force. And that's where we pick up the story. In chapter 10, in about the first seven verses, feel free to read this on your own, but I'm going to give you a summary. We'll try to keep it brief here. The nation of Israel is a couple of million people at this point, and they've come upon obstacle after obstacle as they've gone, but God has just kept knocking down every obstacle. Now, the king of Gibeon, one of the lands nearby, is kind of freaked out. He hears about this. Like I said, people are beginning to hear. Israel is getting a bit of a name for itself. So he basically tricks Joshua a little bit, and you can read this in chapter 9. He decides to be sly, to be slick, and he's like, hey, before Israel, you and your people roll in and just roll over my city and kill us, why don't we be friends, you know? Why don't we make a little pact? We can work together. And so they become an ally of the nation of Israel. Now, what happens after that is that five kings in the area hear about this. They're beginning to notice Israel, and they hear that Israel and Gibeon have made a pact. So they say, hey, before this all pops off, let's jump in. We'll go knock out Gibeon before Israel gets a chance to show up. So King of Gibeon reaches out to Joshua, says, hey, you promised to be our friend. Now protect us. It's time to, do your part based on the deal that we struck. So the Israelites set out. They head to Gibeon to help out and to deal with these five kings. And this is what God says to Joshua in verse 8 of chapter 10 as we jump in. He says, do not be afraid of them, the Lord said to Joshua. Now think about that for a second. You don't tell somebody not to be afraid of something that's not worth being afraid of. Like, nobody has ever told me to not be afraid of a cheeseburger or a slice of pizza, because I am not afraid, and there is no reason for me to be afraid. I am happy to indulge in those things, okay? But people will say, don't be afraid of this spider. It's harmless. Do not be afraid of this snake. It might bite you, but it's not poisonous. I'm still afraid. That doesn't work. Don't be afraid to jump out of this plane. You got a perfectly good parachute on the back. You'll be fine. We say do not be afraid about things that are worth being afraid of. So when God shows up on the scene and says, do not be afraid, it's because there's something scary. Pay attention to that. We can read through these things and kind of gloss over them. No, there's ample reason to be afraid. There are five kings plotting your demise, Joshua, and this is a dangerous situation that you're walking into. But for whatever reason, God says, don't be afraid. And he's going to tell Josh why in the next verse. He says, for I have given you victory over them. Not a single one of them will be able to stand up to you. Isn't this neat? God uses the past tense. I think that's pretty awesome. God says, not I'm going to give you them, not I'm going to give you victory. God says, it's already done. You haven't even left yet. You've not gotten to Gibeon yet. You're not there yet, but guess what? I'm already there, and it's already done. It's already been taken care of. This is the life of a follower of God. God has already taken care of so much, and all he asks us to do is to walk in what he has already done. That's what he's asking Josh. He says, hey, I've taken care of this. I have given you victory. Not a single one of them will be able to stand up to you. So Josh goes. But here's the second sort of big idea I want you to catch in this. God says it's done. God says I've taken care of it, but Joshua still has to walk out what God has said. He still has to walk in the truth that God has given him, which leads us to this. Victory will only come after the battle. So victory comes when I get out of the way, but it also only comes after the battle. Joshua had to walk this through. It didn't just get to happen while he stood on the sidelines. And so what I would say to you as you consider this series, as you consider the God-given dreams that God has placed in your heart and on your life, whatever great expectation it is that you've got, it'll only come after a battle. And I think when we think hard about this, we know this. Think about it. When it comes to marriage, do you know people who've been married for 20 or 30 years? If you do, ask them. They've been through some battles. They've been through some struggles. They've had to walk through difficult things to get where they are. Do you have any friends that you've been friends with for 20 years? If so, you've walked through some things together. Victory only comes after the battle. So whether you come in today and you're struggling in that marriage, or you're struggling in a relationship, you're struggling in a friendship, maybe it's your finances, maybe it's a habit, a struggle, something that you're dealing with that has got you down, and it's beginning to be hard to see a dream. It's beginning to be hard to dream. Maybe that just the when I say the word dream, your immediate response is to shudder, is to back away and to not embrace that dreams are even a possibility anymore. Hear me today. When we get out of the way, victory can and will come. But it's only on the other side of the battle. So we read on and we see what happens with Joshua and the Israelites in this battle. Notice the highlighted parts here. Joshua traveled all night, starting in verse 9, from Gilgal, and took the Amorite armies by surprise. The Lord threw them into a panic. This is the armies, by the way. And the Israelites slaughtered great numbers of them at Gibeon. Then the Israelites chased the enemy along the road to Beth Horon, killing them all along the way to Azekah and Makkedah. The key to pronunciations in the Old Testament is to say them quickly and with confidence. Here we go. As the Amorites retreated down the road from Beth Horon, the Lord destroyed them with a terrible hailstorm from heaven that continued until they reached Azekah. The hail killed more of them than the Israelites killed with the sword. How crazy is this? The Lord is doing the work. Notice I highlighted, it's the Lord. It's not Joshua. It's not Joshua and his military prowess and acumen. It's not the amazing combat skills of the Israelite armies. It's rigged. It's the Lord. He's doing it. How many times do we have to see these things to get it in our own lives? Man, we try so hard to do things on our own. I am the worst example of it. God says, get out of the way. I can do this. I've got this. We'll keep on. Verse 12, on the day the Lord gave the Israelites victory over the Amorites, Joshua prayed to the Lord in front of all the people of Israel. He said, let the sun stand still over Gibeon and the moon over the valley of Ajalon. Let me ask you a question here. What is the craziest thing that you've ever done in front of a group of people? Maybe you quickly go back to some high school or college memories. Maybe there's in the South, there's a phrase we use called, hold my beer. And it's kind of a, watch this, I'm about to do something stupid. Think about that for a moment. Joshua in front of a group of people, like with people watching and listening, he prays that the sun would not move, that it would just stand still in the sky. Hey, laws of nature, just hold on a second. We got some things to do. Pretty insane thing. Basically, what Joshua is saying is like, God, if we're going to defeat this army today, we don't have time. So could you give us some extra time? Could you just bend the laws of physics and nature and just, we'd like a few more hours on this day to get this done. We want you to make the sun stand still. And check it out. Man, when you're following God and you're obeying what he's asked you to do, he does some pretty crazy stuff. So the sun stood still and the moon stayed in place. Pause. Until the nation of Israel had defeated its enemies. Is this event not recorded in the book of Jashar? The sun stayed in the middle of the sky and it did not set as on a normal day. This book that's referenced here, it's an ancient Hebrew text that records the events of the Israelites and their conquests. Joshua's basically saying, hey, if you don't believe me, go read this book. It's in there too. God suspended the laws of nature because he wanted to, because he wanted to show himself. And the earth stopped spinning on its axis. We had a 48-hour day instead of a 24-hour day. And no, I don't know if it was exactly 48 hours, but you get my point. If God can do that, I think he can do some pretty amazing things in our lives today. I think he is up to whatever the task in front of you is. And then check this out. In verse 14, Joshua says this, there has never been a day like this one before or since when the Lord answered such a prayer. Surely the Lord fought for Israel. Man, that's a pretty awesome statement. And I feel like if we can just get a piece of this in our lives, just a piece of believing in the way that Josh did, obeying in the way that Josh did, getting out of the way. I keep saying Josh, Joshua, Josh, we're tight. Anyway, if we can just keep in that same vein, God can do incredible things for me as a dad, as a friend, in ministry and in work and in all of these things. I want a piece of this. I hope that something like this can be said of my life and my God-given dreams, my great expectations one day, that there's never been anything like this before because of what God has done, because of the prayer God has answered, not because Brad is awesome, not because Brad accomplished great things, but because he got out of the way and God did things. I want that for you. I want it for me. I want it for us. So can I ask you some questions here? What are you expecting God to do through your life? Think about it. What great expectation do you have that you need to see victory in? Is it for you personally? Is it for your life in this moment that you need God now? Maybe for the first time you need to say, God, I am giving up control. One of my favorite things to do in prayer and that I tell people who are close to me quite often is to pray with my hands open. And it's simply a gesture that says, God, my hands are open. You can place things into my hands and you can take things out of them. I am not gripped. I am not holding on. God, everything I have comes from you, and everything I have is for you and to you. So God, you put in what you need to put in, and you take out what you need to take out. And that's not always easy. It's not always fun. But he's trustworthy. Maybe that's what you need today is to personally say, Jesus, I give up control. It's yours. You lead. Maybe it's a friend, maybe it's family, maybe it's neighbor, somebody in your life that you're praying big things for that you need God to step in and answer. Maybe it's finances, maybe it's career, maybe it's that marriage, maybe it's some other relationship. Whatever it is, what is something you can do this week to get out of the way and surrender to what God wants to do? Maybe you need to be willing to face something head on and not run from the battle. I can attest to that one in my own life many times. Instead of running away to face what is in front of you. Imagine for a moment what it would be like for victory to come to that place in your life. Imagine what it would be like to experience something like this and be able to say, there's never been a day like this one before or since when the Lord answered such prayer. Let's pray. Father, thank you that we can see the examples in the Old Testament of these people of yours who did amazing things by getting out of the way and letting you accomplish what you wanted to accomplish. I pray that we would learn from them. God, I pray that we would trust you today, that our hearts would be filled with love for you and feel the love that you have for us, and that would allow us to let go, to release control, to surrender, to stop trying to do it all ourselves, to stop trying to figure it out on our own, to get out of the way so that you can accomplish great things through us, in us, and for us. God, we ask that for today. In your name we pray. Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us today, for taking some time out of your schedule to sit down and enjoy and learn and listen today. So if that has done something good for you, if you've benefited from this in some way, we would really appreciate it if you would like the video, share it, subscribe to our channel, share it with a friend. Anything that you do like that helps us to just grow our influence, and we really appreciate it. Also, you can go to our website if you would like to give to support our ministry and everything that we're doing here in our local community and around the world. That would be at nextlevelchurch.org/give. Thank you so much for doing that. Now, by way of benediction, one last verse for you. Ephesians 3:20 says this, "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine according to his power that is at work within us." When we get out of the way, God is able to do immeasurably more than we can even imagine. I pray that for you today as we get out of the way and we let him lead through us. We'll see you back next week.